Welcome everyone to episode 32 of the BAM Comic Podcast. If it's about comic movies, if it's about comic games, if it's about comic TVs, if it's about comics, we'll be talking about it right here on BAM Comic Podcast.
Blimey.
Good, right?
I like the improv there.
Yeah. I sort of started faltering in the middle and I ran out of puff.
Pulled it back.
And I pulled it back. Pretty confident about that. Welcome everyone to issue 32. Can you believe it?
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, we've had a bit of a summer holiday, haven't we?
Yeah, we have had a summer holiday.
Issue 31. So.
Yeah, you've been off gallivanting on business.
I have, but also, of course, I got stamped in my nerd calendar or nerd card. What's the kind of hip thing? There isn't one, is there?
File effects.
Yeah. So I went to Vienna.
Yeah, you did.
And I went to a comic book shop in Vienna, which is very cool.
Yeah.
And they had loads of like American comics, English language comics, and they had loads of like European stuff. Even an Austrian superhero comic book series, which I kind of half regret not picking up because it looked amazingly bad. But yeah, I was actually really impressed by like the graphic novel section they had, like loads of European stuff. I kind of wish I took more photographs of what they were in case they had been translated over here. The actual graphic albums are like A4 size.
Oh, okay. Like,
fully painted. They just look amazing. Couldn't read a word of them.
We're missing out. So that voice you can hear is regular host Stu. I'm regular host Neil. And Carly's been and gone during the summer holidays.
She has. Yeah,
she was here, honest. She does exist.
She does. She'll be back. Maybe in a couple of episodes time, I think.
Yeah.
He said, looking at the schedule.
Yeah, she's travelling again. So hold on in there and you'll hear Carly soon enough. Anyway, what do we have today, Stu?
Well, today...
Yeah.
We've got a mixed bag of... interesting things.
Okay.
For different reasons.
Right.
So we are recording on the 28th of August, 2017.
That's true.
Which just happens to be, if you were still alive, the 100th birthday of Jack Kirby.
Okay.
Who arguably should be held on equal, I would say above, Stan Lee for the creation of the Marvel Universe. Amongst other things, he's created a lot of stuff.
All right.
So, yeah, I mean, both Marvel and DC have done a series of comics to sort of mark this occasion during August.
So did he go across both then? He wasn't one
or
the other?
Yeah, we shall go into more detail on that.
All right, okay.
And the other thing we're going to talk about is a movie that we saw.
We did. We went to the cinema.
Yeah. So it was a one evening or one day showing internationally for Batman and Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
The new animated series spin-off, really. So I'm pretty sure it was tied into the animated series from the 90s.
Although, the team's moved on, but it was essentially in that world of the Kevin Conroy Batman 90s that you watched. It was that, but a new one.
Exactly, and for reasons that we'll go into when we talk about it in more detail, there were moments we weren't quite sure where it was supposed to be. So that's what we got this show.
All right.
It's quite a lot. I mean... What do you want to talk about first?
I guess you should tell me about Jack Kirby. Who's Jack Kirby? You say Stan Lee. Everyone knows Stan Lee.
Yeah.
How come we don't know Kirby as much?
So I think it's quite telling that when we've had conversations about this before, I am slightly older than you, and I have a kind of, even though I'm obviously a massive comic fan, so I would have a bit more knowledge, I guess, of certain creators.
Mm-hmm.
It surprised me that you didn't really know who Jack Kirby was at all.
Not really, no.
So growing up in the late 70s, early 80s, it was really hard for me to find American comic books. And I wasn't necessarily into them. Like, for me, it was all about the Batman 60s TV series.
Yeah.
But in 1983, Marvel UK started a couple of weekly comic books. I actually found one on eBay yesterday. I think it's about April 83. So for 25p, you could have got a copy of The Mighty Thor, issue one.
Thank God. I thought you had it there in front of you. Yeah, you've done it again.
I was tempted. So... I want to show you the visuals because it's kind of give you an idea. This is what greeted me on the shelf. So it was, look at that. So
there he is.
That isn't Kirby artwork. I think that's John Buscema, who followed a very Kirby-esque style. So basically, you know these dots? That's kind of like the Kirby dots. You see a lot in comic books, kind of starry stuff. So yeah, I'll be honest. I think I bought it for the free space spinner.
What is the super spinner? Was this the precursor to fidget spinners?
Kind of. It's like a giant plastic... boomerang, if I remember rightly, and basically it was like a frisbee. So basically you got that, and you know, 25p, look, every page in great Marvel color,
wow,
which was slightly misleading.
Okay.
For reasons that you'll see. So basically, half the comic was in colour. So there you are, full colour.
Yeah.
And the strip was, you read it, so I've got it upside down. It says, The Wrath of the Wrecker.
The Wrath of the Wrecker.
So this is Stan Lee and Jack Kirby on point here. So, yeah, they're the Wrecker.
He's wrecking stuff.
He's wrecking stuff. Basically, he's got like a purple balaclava.
He does.
And he's got like an Asgardian enchanted crowbar. Which, if I know my knowledge, I think that was Loki was involved behind that. He got involved.
Okay.
So yeah, full colour. Like, yeah, full colour. Amazing. Oh, this is amazing. It's all A4 size as well, you know.
Ooh, lovely. Ooh, full colour poster. There. Yeah.
Spidey and Thor. But then it goes a bit purple. So basically, half the comic was in full colour.
Yeah.
And the rest of the pages were like spot colour.
I mean, it is colour, but why do you do that?
Just costs, printing costs. Saves them going full colour on every page.
Huh.
So this came out. Mighty Thor came out. I literally was like, pick this up for the spinner.
Yeah.
And it was actually an adaptation of issue 171 of Thor. So they started at a really random point.
Mm.
I thought, because this is like late 60s run. Like,
yeah.
Lee and Kirby and Thor.
Yeah.
So they picked this up, and for me it was just like, I was aware it felt old, but it didn't feel as modern as other comics, but it had this kind of like energy and
yeah,
and that, a lot of that came from Kirby.
Okay.
And a few weeks later, Marvel UK also did an Uncanny X-Men series of reprints, which actually went right back to the beginning and was like the very first issue of the Uncanny X-Men. So running concurrently, you had like Stan Lee and Kirby on X-Men.
Yeah.
So at 9 years old, I was getting exposed to like the classics for the very first time.
Mm.
This is pre-internet kids, you know, this is like raw comic book action. And I remember just being blown away by the kind of art style. It just had this, I think it's really hard to put it in words, but it's just, yeah, until you've seen it at that age, it's, I imagine people look at it now, and I'm going to ask you what you think. if his art style, I probably don't quite get it, but at an impressionable age.
Yeah.
It was pretty impressive. So that was kind of my early exposure. But then I became more aware in the sort of later 80s where there was some legal shenanigans going on.
Okay.
I was reading like a UK like fan newspaper, and it had...
Remember about, those kids?
Mm.
Yeah.
Again, this is a printed page before your internet. So he... yeah, this is like his final year. So basically in like, actually I'm going to Wikipedia, I am cheating.
Okay.
So basically in 87, due to pressure from fellow peers, comic creators and the fan community, Marvel ended up returning his original artwork, or as much as they had of it. So it ended up being something like 2,000 pages of his original artwork out of like, you know, 10,000 to 13,000 he actually did for the studio. So it's not a lot.
Yeah.
Because there was a process, basically, it was called work for hire.
Mm.
So whatever you did, you got paid for.
Yeah.
But you didn't own any of that copyright. Yeah. And they took your artwork. You didn't get the artwork back.
Yeah.
So it's pretty shonky. And, you know, it's different now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they actually have, you know, royalties and stuff. But if you take yourself back to the beginning,
none
of this stuff.
Yeah.
And there's, if you do a bit of research, there's like court cases about Siegel and Shuster, the guys who created Superman, who didn't get a fraction of what the characters made. And I won't go too much, but you can dive deep on the whole copyright stuff. I always find it quite fascinating that copyright laws over here are different in the UK, but in the US, I think the original copyright law was something about you own the copyright for your lifetime plus 50 years.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
But there's, you know, companies like Disney who bought Marvel.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, all the characters they create themselves, like, you know, their take on Snow White and all that stuff. Obviously, Disney isn't going to go anywhere anytime soon, so it's going to go on for another 100 years or plus. And the same with, like, you know, the superhero characters, you know, these guys were created in the early 60s and now it's like they've got a new, you know, a new lease of life. There's no way Disney's going to go, oh, well, the copyright's lapsed out. Mr. Creator, your family can have that back.
Yeah, you can make an Iron Man movie now. Yeah.
And actually, with the Kirbys, after he died in 94, and I think it was like the late 2000s, I think it was after like the Iron Man movie came out, that the Kirby estate... what's the phrase? Are they served like a notice of termination to like Disney, film studios? Because obviously, you know, Disney have certain number of characters. We know that Sony have got Spider-Man, Fox have got X-Men,
yeah.
And Fantastic Four.
Mm.
So basically they served a notice of termination, which they lost the case, but yeah, there was a settlement out of court as well.
Oh.
So they could keep those characters. But it's, yeah, it's a bit shocking.
Hmm.
But I digress.
Okay.
So yes, back to Kirby, back to the present day and what the guys are doing with the comics. So you kindly picked up a wodge of what Marvel have put out. So actually it's interesting that both companies have taken a different approach. Marvel have just done a series of one-shots,
yeah,
of some of the best Kirby creations throughout his career. It wasn't just like the early stuff in the 60s. Because he left Marvel because he wasn't happy with the working practices and went to DC.
Mm, yeah, same.
And then came back to Marvel in the mid-70s. Mm. And he did stuff like this, which was a Black Panther. He actually did a whole Black Panther relaunch comic.
Fantastic read, by the way.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah. So I like what they've done here, because normally this is under their True Believers line, which is a collection of reprints. So it will take first appearances of characters like Cable,
yeah,
or Deadpool, and then package it for $1 or, yeah, about a pound over in the UK.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Never really interested me, because, like, you know, I always want to get the originals. But yeah, this, I think, was a really cool idea, because it means that a lot of people can pick up Kirby stuff for a quid and kind of get an idea of what he did,
yeah,
why he is so significant. And it predates the kind of modern relaunch of Marvel as well in the early 60s.
It really does.
Because you've got, like, so they've actually packaged up Groot from one of the Monster comics, which I think is from the late 50s, actually.
Yeah, he's so instead, yeah, of lovable Groot in this one, he's like a building-sized tree.
Yeah.
He's just threatening in plain English to, like, overthrow humanity by controlling all the trees. And it's like,
what do you think of it? I thought it was hilarious. So
I mean, it is hilarious, and in some ways it's hilarious, but it's so dated, it's almost impenetrable.
So do you remember the scenario of it? So Groot is this big tree creature who can control trees.
Yeah, I mean, that's it,
obviously. And you got, like, your generic scientist guy.
Yeah.
And on the cover, it's brilliant. He says, "I defy you, Groot. I shall destroy you before midnight." Very specific.
Very specific.
And it's not as if there's some kind of thing that happens at midnight. It's just that he's decided,
yeah,
I'm going to roll
him over. He's putting his scientific,
yeah,
reputation on the line.
The thing I found funny about this one was that his relationship with his girlfriend, I don't even think she's even named, but she's like... she's a dick. Like, she's, like, really rude to him. Like, "Oh, you're a coward," and... something like, what's it says here? They're going to walk, so their car breaks down because Groot lands from space and it, yeah, screws up their car.
Yeah.
And she says, alright, but it would do you more good to walk there. Might toughen you up a little, harden your muscles. This is a bit...
It's like, it's whipping back to, like, that 60s perception that, yeah, that, yeah, they're all... Scientists, they're all, like, Poindexters, yeah, that have sound kicked in their face.
And spoilers, he does save the day. And the last caption is her saying, "Oh, darling, forgive me. I've never been such a fool. I'll never complain about you again. Never." It's like, these
all he had to do was save humanity,
yeah,
from a giant alien.
Which, to be fair, I think that does give him a bit of a pass. But so, yeah, wasn't the best depiction of women, actually.
It's, but bizarre to see Groot. I'm almost certain that... I mean, it's a wonder that they made a Guardians of the Galaxy movie at all, but I'm certain that people sitting there watching it had no idea that this was the original, yeah, origin.
Yeah, and it's a character that he hasn't been seen since. Like, right, this is a one-off story, like 8 pages or something. And then they kind of revived him in, like, the late 2000s with the kind of what we've seen in the movie is, like, a fairly modern take on the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
So really, you could have taken any character. So it's kind of a bit strange.
I wonder why.
Yeah. But Kirby did create some amazing monsters and creatures. So you've also got Zemnu, the Hulk, in here, who predated the Hulk.
Yeah.
And Zemnu has come back, and he's taken on She-Hulk. Basically looks like a big polar bear with two eyes, no mouth.
Just very furry.
Yeah, very furry, yeah, and has mind power controls
because
of 60s. Because.
The Black Panther one was hilarious.
Never read this one before. Yeah, this is when he came back in the 70s. Yeah, it's such a bizarre Kirby-esque thing. So you've got, like, the caption on the cover is amazing. Like, they searched for it, they fought and even killed for it. What was it? And you're like, what was it? It's, yeah, King Solomon's frog.
King Solomon's frog. You know the story of King Solomon's frog.
Famous King Solomon's frog.
it's just bizarre. It's bizarre. Like, they give credit where credit's due to, like, you know, Black Panther being an original black superhero, yeah. But you just forget how blaxploitation his roots are. And it's just, wow. Wow. They don't overly ham it, but, well, not with Black Panther anyway, but just the state of the other characters surrounding him.
Well, you've got Princess Sander, who's kind of a mix of African queen.
Yeah, and never has the phrase Nubian queen been more eloquent. Yeah.
But again, then it's got Kirby's take on it, so it's that kind of almost science fiction-y look on it as well. And again, that's like, you look at her and you think, yeah, she could certainly be an Asgard.
Yeah.
But, you know, those kind of...
Lovely crazy tassels on her boots.
Very
lovely
nice tassels. It's 76. You've got lots of tassels. But yeah, I've never read this before and it was like completely bonkers.
I like that just Captain America just shows up.
Yeah. But that's the thing about Marvel. That's a kind of... what made those comics such a success, I think. And that's, you know, down to Kirby as well.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just Stan Lee. It's, you know, people felt they were in a universe. I think when... It's hard to say. I also didn't read them back in those days, but I think then when you had, like, your DC heroes, they were very much separate, it felt like. What Stan and Jack did was create a universe that felt connected.
Yeah.
So you'd pick up Fantastic Four 1 week and then, you know... So they'll be in New York and you'll see Spider-Man swinging in the background, like, take on the Vulture.
Mm.
And then the following week, you'll pick up a copy of the Vulture. Of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And that scene would be happening.
Mm.
But then you'll see it from a different perspective. And it's
clever.
It's take it for granted now because they do that now. But back then, it was just like, oh my God, this is incredible. You know, so, you know, for that generation, it felt like you were in on a, almost not in joke, but it almost felt you were in on something big. And I think that's how it worked. That's what the appeal was.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, this run is, like, full of origins for characters, and some of them are just utterly alien compared to what we know now.
I don't know which one.
Yeah, it was straight for Thor. Just, what? What? Yeah. I mean, I think the whole Asgardian thing is a push too far for many people, but this one, you're just like, what is going on here?
This is, and again... I kind of took it for granted because I remember picking up... there used to be these paperback editions.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever saw these when you were a kid, but they would reprint comic books in a paperback format.
Mm,
so I know they did, like... You probably would have seen, like, the Star Wars adaptations.
Yeah.
And I remember, like... So you'd get the comics and you'd get... you wouldn't necessarily get graphic novels back then, but you might get a magazine-sized version. But then they'd do these, like, paperback versions. And they used to do... Like all the classic 60s runs of Marvel you could get in paperback format in a series of paperbacks.
Yeah.
So I had, like, The Incredible Hulk, which was just incredible, pardon the pun. It was, like, the original, like, things of six issues of, like, Lee and Kirby's run.
Yeah.
In a paperback format. It was just, that's probably my favourite. To pick a run
of
Kirby stuff, it would be the original Hulk stuff. And then I picked up the one with Thor. So when the movie came out, or when the movie was in production, I was kind of... I didn't know how they could do it. If they're going to be faithful to the comic, for me it felt a step too far because this is something that's been abandoned now. But you tell me, what do you remember? What was the thing that blew you away about how fucking nuts this was? Do you remember what it...
It was. He's just sort of like, yeah, he's just like... He's a man called Dr. Blake and he sees... He's just out for a walk looking at the stars when he's aware of, like, a spaceship landing. And I think from that spaceship, he gets a hammer?
He seeks shelter because it's like the stone men or something. He's kind of like stone characters.
Oh, God, I've forgotten about that.
So he does a runner because he's lame as well, isn't he? So he's got a walking stick. So he's kind of... Not because he's... Actually, no, he's lame as well.
Yeah.
But they used to call him as lame. I guess they'd say you'd say he's handicapped now or something.
Mm.
But, so he seeks shelter in a rock and just happens to find another stick on a plinth.
Yeah.
And because, like, you do, you pick it up and you just whack it against a bit of wood, wouldn't you, or a bit of concrete, which is
So he's a mild-mannered, less able-bodied doctor running away from space aliens.
Yeah.
He takes shelter in a cave where he finds a magic stick, gives it a whack, and it transforms him into Almighty Thor.
It does.
Because reasons.
Yeah. And what I'd forgotten about is he doesn't just become... the Thor we know.
Yeah.
He is still Donald Blake.
Yeah.
Yeah, your average Joe who just looks like Thor now. And he's like, oh, wow, I've got this power. I've got this strength. Oh, if I look on the side of the hammer, it tells me that whoever holds this hammer shall possess the power of mighty Thor. And he's like, oh, that's amazing. I forgot about.
Yeah.
because they actually this did change quite soon in that basically Donald Blake would hit the cane on the ground and would become Thor.
Yeah.
But Thor was a separate person.
Yeah.
They shared memories, I think, of their experience. Kind of like, so that's equally batshit crazy, I know. But this, for me, is even worse. Imagine that this guy just becomes Thor with his big long hair and his helmet. Yeah, so that's your Thor. Yeah. It was kind of weird reading it again. It's like, oh,
straight away, he's just into fantastic scrapes with monsters and everything. It's just... He's barely got the hang of his own hammer, and already he's into
it. It's just bizarre. It's a million miles away from where we are now.
Yeah, yeah. They abandoned, I think, the Donald Blake identity got abandoned in the early 80s, which I think we talked about another show, which was like literally the first couple of issues of the Walt Simonson run.
Yeah,
it was like, right, that's gone. yeah, I think we get a nod to Donald Blake in the first Thor movie during a scene where Selvig rescues him.
Yeah,
I think they end up putting on doctor's overalls on him. It's at the beginning when they get him out of the hospital.
Yeah,
they put on nurse's overalls, and it actually happens to be like Donald Blake's name tag on it or something. So,
which is cute, but just wow. Yeah. If you forget how far out all of these are, like there was even like the Avengers one as well. There, but just am I right in saying that Captain America had been sort of like phased out for a while, and they brought him back? So as Avengers?
Well, yeah, and again, this is Kirby again. Like, Kirby co-created Captain America in the 40s with a guy called Joe Simon. Mm. And I need to check my dates, but I've got a feeling it almost predates when the US became involved with the Second World War.
Mm.
I think it's about 41. I don't think they came in until 42.
Yeah.
But it's a really legendary cover. Captain America Comics issue 1 is basically Captain America punching Hitler.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was punching Nazis before it became trendy in this current climate. So he was a trailblazer.
Yeah.
But yeah, so basically Captain America, they did that collaboration. It seems quite fun. You look back in those days and they go, oh, we had an idea for a comic, so we did one. And it sold millions of copies.
Mm.
Like, comics don't sell that anymore.
Yeah.
But they were selling millions. And they worked on that for quite a few years. I think they left the company. It was kind of, they got shafted. It's one of many stories of them getting shafted.
Yeah.
Then he was drafted into the war effort.
Hmm.
And he fought in Europe. And if I remember my anecdotes correctly, I think his senior officer was like, oh, you're Jack Kirby, I've read your comics. Yeah, you're amazing. So sent him on missions where he would go into enemy territory and would come back with sketches of the maps and of the areas, like, so, you know, it's really dangerous, but it was kind of like, almost, I was just thinking, well, imagine that, having that Kirby stuff in print, his takes on it. So yeah, then I think Captain America kind of languished during the 50s and so, and then like the fourth issue of Avengers, they brought him back.
Just thawed out.
Yeah.
Thawed out whilst Submariner and Hulk, I think it is, are having a fight.
Yeah.
They happen to shake off a bit of glacier that Captain America's buried underneath.
Yeah.
And he just thaws himself out.
Exactly. And this is when Submariner was like a bad guy. he was always kind of borderline. He had a kind of empathy with him, but he's a massive dick. And so you really need one, you go, oh, he's such a douche. I think he's kind of on the side of good in current continuity, but he's been a bit conflicted. Rumours had that Dwayne Johnson was going to be him in a movie, like many, many years ago.
I could see it, but just it's just not a... I mean, yeah, I say that as Justice League movie looms, but it's just not a... You couldn't watch an entire movie of just... Well, could you watch an entire movie of Dwayne Johnson in his pants under the water?
Some could.
Some could.
I actually think that with Aquaman coming out, Submariner being on the big screen is just not going to happen because, you know, he comes from Atlantis as well. And I just think people, you know, the average audience are going to go, hang on a minute, we've seen this. This is quite blatant.
Yeah.
And like, do you know, Submariner was like from the 40s as well, so it's kind of a bit...
It's too much of a stretch.
Too much.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the Marvel effort, which I thought was quite good. So there were, I think it was like 14 issues? It's 26. No, it's 12 one-offs, which are Avengers, which reprints Avengers 4, Black Panther, which reprints issue 1 of Black Panther, Groot, we spoke about. There's a Thor versus Hulk.
Yep, I see that in the stash.
Yeah, which was, I think it's one of the first ever reader-requested stories, I think.
Oh, really?
It's basically, you know, readers would write in at the time going, oh, who could win in a fight? Is it Thor versus Hulk?
Yeah.
And so the story goes, if you believe Stan Lee, it, this was in answer to that. So basically you see Thor versus Hulk.
Mm.
It's kind of a bit ambiguous who actually wins at the end. I'm not quite sure. So yeah, Mighty Thor, first appearance. Then you've got the origin of Captain America from, I think it was like Tales of Suspense.
Mm.
Inhumans, issue one. Nick Fury, Agent of the Shield. Ant-Man and the Wasp. I wonder why they've done that one.
Mm.
Is there a movie coming out?
Maybe.
And then Iron Man, which was like the golden Iron Man suit, which is hilarious. And then you've got Eternals issue one and Devil Dinosaur issue one, which were, that these were these like 1970s comebacks.
Yeah.
Eternals never quite took off.
No.
Although a lot of stuff he created in that, primarily the Celestials, which are these big, like, giant demigod creatures, still have a resonance today. They are in the very first Guardians of the Galaxy, the scene where the Collector talks about the Infinity Stones.
Yeah.
And you see this giant, looks a bit like robot dude in armour, literally massacring an entire planet.
Yeah.
That's actually a Celestial, so we may see those again in the movies.
Right.
It's heavy stuff. I always say it's very Kirby, which is like deep cosmic stuff.
Yeah.
So that's Marvel's effort.
Mm.
Which I guess leads us on to DC's, which you haven't had a chance to see yet, have you?
No, I haven't.
So DC took a different approach.
Right.
By creating original material based on stuff he created when he came. Because he left Marvel in the 60s and he went to DC and was kind of given carte blanche. The thing that's kind of most connected with him in DC is that what's called the Fourth World Saga.
Okay.
Which is basically something called the New Gods and the Forever People, and you're going yep. If I say to you Darkseid, it's that basically the characters that are kind of resonated and lived on are something like Darkseid.
Yeah.
Even though the series themselves at the time didn't particularly sell well or last, their legacy is still there.
Yeah.
So yeah, a couple few one shots. Price difference is drastically different compared to the Marvel stuff. So these are like $5 a pop, which is quite pricey. Very glossy. It is new material. The New God special I thought was pretty cool. Stood out very well. So what they've done with all of these, you get new material, then they put in some reprint stuff from Kirby to kind of give you an idea of here's what he actually did originally. Again, it's hit and miss. They're just kind of taking random short stories. The other one I picked up, which was not too bad, is Newsboy Legion and Boy Commandos.
Right, no idea.
No, actually, these characters I think he created in the 50s. Mm. And it's Howard Chaykin who's done this, who we know from Divided States of Hysteria.
Yeah.
It's all right. Yeah, it's a kind of, and it's set in like the 50s. It's kind of like a McCarthy-esque conspiracy and stuff. It's very complex, I thought. It's all right. Mm. Not so good are The Sandman and Manhunter. The only good thing about the Manhunter is actually got a demon backup who's actually one of my favourite DC Kirby creations.
Okay.
I have got some in the loft, like from the 70s. So the demon is Etrigan the Demon. You may recognise him from some comics. It's that dude. He was in the animated series as well.
Right.
Batman animated series.
Right.
And he's the sort of demonic brother of Merlin. Right? Bear with me. And he's bound to a sorcerer called Jason Blood, who's like hundreds of years old now. He's like, so basically he could, they does an incantation, he turns into Etrigan. Etrigan does a similar incantation, then turns back into Jason Blood. And yeah, you had like weird stuff like Clarion the Witch Boy, who's just like a witch boy just like dropped out the Salem witch trials, you know.
It's yeah,
like weird stuff, but it was I really enjoyed it when it came out. And he's appeared in like a lot of the DC horror stuff in the 80s, like Alan Moore used him in Swamp Thing.
Oh, okay.
It's a great effect. He had a gimmick. I don't think Kirby actually created this, but when I grew up in the 80s reading him, he always spoke in rhyming couplets, which must have been a massive ball ache to write.
Yeah.
And in this one shot, they haven't got him doing that. And I think in modern stuff, he's stopped doing it. It's just, it just feels clunky. So that was quite fun. And it's this short story the Manhunter special has got one of those twist in the tale stories about a woman who's like an actress and is really beautiful, and the guy's like, oh, I want to go on a date with her. So he arranges to have a date with her, and she rucks up wearing bandages on her face.
Right.
And the reason why it's revealed is because her face is ancient, because she's hundreds of years old due to
reasons
due to magic and stuff.
Yeah. Kind of sums up a lot of Kirby, I'm sort of guessing.
Yeah.
Because magic and stuff.
So yeah, I mean, I'm not as impressed with the DC stuff. I like its original material.
Yeah.
But it's very expensive, and by all means borrow them and have a read. But I was reading them with you in mind, and some of this stuff I just imagine you going, what I don't understand. Go on.
So we owe Kirby a lot then for the extended universe, that sort of idea.
Yeah, just comics in general. And I would say to someone, you know, who's not really aware of this stuff, do pick up some of the Marvel stuff. It's only £1, it's only $1. If you're going to go into the comic shop, this is where you can pick up your usual stuff. You've got nothing to lose, and you may be surprised and get some, you know.
You'll be a hit at all the parties.
You will be a hit at all the parties.
With your comic knowledge.
Yeah. Maybe put the DC side to one stuff. One?
Ooh, that was a bit of a remix.
That was a remix. Maybe put the DC stuff to one side.
There we go.
There you go. But yeah, it's kind of got me fired up to want to look at collecting some of the stuff I haven't picked up on yet. I've got gaps in the collection, particularly like the New Gods Forever People stuff that Kirby did with Darkseid, because it's amazing.
Wow, there we go.
But yeah, at the moment it's probably going to go up. Rocket in price as the inevitable Justice League movie comes up. Because the bad guy in that, Steppenwolf, he's like a deputy of Darkseid. That's a Kirby creation.
Well, there we go. Jack Kirby, we salute you.
Yeah. And I think I mentioned this before on a podcast. Mm. It's clear that in Thor Ragnarok, they are paying tribute to Kirby. Because the designs of like the war planet or the gladiator world, when we see like some of the armoured guys, that's pure Kirby costume. And there's a backdrop where you see Jeff Goldblum's character and Loki watching the arena. There's a kind of quirky backdrop, and that's actually taken from a panel of Fantastic Four they've blown up. So it's kind of like, I like that. It's kind of paying tribute to the source material.
Yeah. I love that stuff.
Yes, deep cuts.
There we go, Jack Kirby.
We salute you.
Right, so during our time off, such as it were, Stu and I had a little cinema day, which doesn't happen as often as we'd like.
Kids, responsibilities. Being an adult.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But of course, comics were too big of a lure, so we don't really have... Well, I kind of missed out on the summer blockbuster of Spider-Man.
You did?
I did. Oops. Again, kids, responsibilities. But coming out of nowhere, he says, there was a new animated Batman film. Batman and Harley Quinn. Yeah, because you went and saw The Killing Joke this time last year.
Yes, which was a mixed bag, as if you go back a few episodes or a year's worth of episodes.
Yeah, probably about a year to the day's worth of episodes. So there's a lot of celebration for Harley, and to honour that, they commissioned a new animated.
Is it 25 years or something? Yeah. Is this creation of the character?
Yeah. So there's a documentary coming out, but there's also this new animated film, so we thought we'd go along and see it, and we did.
We did.
And what a wild ride it turned out to be. Yeah,
it was a movie, I think, was your reaction of it. That was certainly a movie.
The only way to sum it up was that was indeed a movie with the beginning, middle and end. I didn't quite know, what to expect. Big fan of the animated series. I mean, who isn't? It always had that lovely, dark but well-written gothic theme. And just the intro to this one was a bit like the old Pink Panther movies. Of like, you know, comedy Batman chasing comedy Harley Quinn.
But I thought it set the tone. At that point, I was like, oh, it's going to be like a kind of caper movie.
Yeah. To be honest, before the actual credit sequence, I'm getting ahead of myself, we sort of had the scene being set with a break-in at Star Labs, where Poison Ivy and a big green guy that I didn't know, but you did.
As I say this, I just know the reaction. That'll be your man, Jason Woodrue,
who
is called the Floronic Man.
Who?
Ah, wow. So when I read comics with the Floronic Man, he was mutated and had power over plants, as Poison Ivy does, a Swamp Thing.
So it makes sense that they're together.
Yeah, but right. What I didn't understand is, I think in modern continuity, which they've adopted for this movie, is he comes from another dimension where dryads, who are like elemental plant beings,
yeah,
and he's an escapee from another dimension. Which
just already you're off at the deep end.
Okay.
So like, yeah, part of me was like, we're 20 seconds into this movie, I don't know one of the major villains.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, clearly they're just going to be beaten up and we'll get on with the main story. Nope, they're being set up as the main villains of this piece. And there was some blood. He manages to kill some security guards. So I'm like, oh, maybe we've got like a darker tone. Yeah. Then the credits start and it's a bit like a comic caper.
Yeah.
So already I'm like, maybe. I mean, it could go either way at this point. And just the movie starts. Batman and Nightwing,
mm-hmm.
not Robin, Nightwing. No. They're doing their thing. You can hear the timbre in Kevin Conroy's voice. Love him to bits for coming back, but you can hear he's getting on in years. Nothing wrong with that, per se. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. But wow, this movie was tonally all over the place.
I totally agree. I think you're going to go to the point where I think we all went, it's the whole scene with Nightwing with Harley Quinn, right?
Yeah, so in order to track down the Floronic Man and Poison Ivy, their best plan is to track down Harley Quinn, who's supposedly gone straight.
Yeah.
And they track her down to a superhero-themed bar, diner, where the waitresses are in sort of like skimpy outfits of like the DC heroines and villains. And there was some like deep cuts in there.
Because there was wall art as well, which I think was literally just reproductions of like 1970s artwork.
Yeah.
They could put in, which is quite nice.
Yeah, but like straight away I'm just like, oh, this doesn't feel right. This wouldn't have been in the Batman animated series. Anyway, Harley Quinn is hiding in plain sight as Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
As a waitress in this place, and you know, she has this bit where like, there's a very gratuitous shot of her bent over a table, and of course some guy's like, bum, I'm gonna give that a squeeze. But like, it goes on forever, like uncomfortably long, and sure enough she dispenses justice by beating them all up. Fair enough. She goes home. There's a lovely transition of her walking home doing a crossword, and the neighbourhood she keeps walking just gets rougher and rougher. I thought that was nice.
Yeah.
And that's about the last good bit in the film. Her and Nightwing throw down in an alleyway. She defeats him by using some Joker Venom,
mm-hmm.
mild dose. He wakes up tied to the four-poster bed, and fan service happens. Basically, we get...
She throws down in the bedroom.
We get a strange sex scene that's like cut off just at the pivotal moment. But just, that was the bit that lost me. And it was lost because we're here to sort of celebrate Harley Quinn, and that's fine. And I've read many different views on this, that this was empowering and, you know, girl this, girl that, fine. But like, her remark to Nightwing before she notices his visible erection and decides to jump on it, is she's like, oh, we worked up a sweat in that fight. And then she sniffs her armpits and she's like, I'm really stinking. And I'm like, after the film, they show a bit of the documentary where they're discussing the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath.
Yeah.
And they're talking about, you know, like the sociopath just wants to make it all about them and they say outlandish things. Fair enough. This is a sociopath. But never, ever, regardless of their mental state, have I ever known a lady in my entire life to go, I'm absolutely stinking right now, and then hop on the good foot and do the bad thing.
Yeah.
Just what?
Oh, no, I don't.
At that point, I was lost.
No. Actually, one thing we should say, it's voiced by Melissa Rauch, or Rauch, I don't know how you pronounce it. Sorry.
From Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory. And I think she was great. I thought she was really, really good as the character. She hasn't really done anything radically different with the voice. You have that, you've got that kind of gangster mole voice against that, you know, that's fine.
Yeah.
And what I felt with her more than I felt with Nightwing is actually she kind of got into the character. The guy voiced Nightwing. I've forgotten his name, I'm sorry.
If you're listening. Sorry, Nightwing.
I want to say it's Lorne something or other, but anyway.
Lorne Sausage.
Yeah, but he was, I don't know, his delivery just felt a bit flat and it was a bit phoned in.
Mm.
But I totally got them. Melissa Rout was really into this and gave it her all. And she had some good scenes and good moments, but it just felt all over the shop. Like, was it aimed at kids? Was it aimed at adults? Was it in between?
I just don't know. It's just, again, tonally, it's off. She teams up with Batman and Nightwing and they speed off into Gotham and they're looking for like a contact that she knows that'll point the way to Poison Ivy. And she's like, there he is. And it turns out to be a guy that she dated and then dumped her. Just wanted an excuse to beat him up. And I'm like, oh, okay, seems like a bit of a wasted time.
Yeah.
Then they go for a drive way out of Gotham.
Yeah.
To like a bad guy hideout bar, and on the way she has flatulence, and there's just like a 60 second sequence where she just farts in the back of the Batmobile
because she wants to go and use the toilet, doesn't she? So yeah, I need to go to the loo. Yeah,
and they're like, no way. Yeah. And again, just like, it's totally, I don't understand what you're trying to do here. If it was funny, I think one person in the cinema was like, huh.
I think we both kind of chuckled, but it was more like I don't know what I'm watching.
What has this become?
I'm confused.
And then they arrive at this bad guy, basically henchman hangout.
Yeah.
A rockabilly club in the middle of nowhere.
Mm.
And that in itself is bizarre. Like, there's obvious, like, deep, deep cut Easter eggs, but they're so deep cut you don't really understand them. And then we're treated to not one, but two musical numbers back to back.
Yeah. Musical number two, I liked.
Right, which is Harley Quinn. In order to get the information, she has to perform karaoke to impress this henchman.
So sexy
she
does karaoke as
sexy
well.
Sexy karaoke. Again, lingering shots in her bum and her writhing. So they do Hang on the Telephone, which is fine.
And she, Melissa Rout actually sings it as well.
Yep, absolutely nails it. But it is beginning to end. Beginning to end. And before that, they had two identical twins, which I don't know from DC continuity.
I don't think they are specific henchmen, but I just totally got, well, they're identical twins, so they must be linked to Two-Face. And it's some kind of like weird showbiz tune, which I can't remember what it's called, but it was kind of talking about
being a couple and like how much you love each other. And
but you remember the scene that
but they're basically reenacting it. One is very much the woman of the piece, and one is very much the man of the piece, and they're both identical twins dressed the same, and it's just,
so that's incest then?
I don't know what they're trying to do. I mean, one or the other, you know, keep one of these song numbers, fine. It was good, weird in a way, like it was almost Lynchian, like it was like straight out of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, actually, yes, fair comment. And it, like those weird dialogue conversations that don't seem to go anywhere, and they actually don't.
Yeah. And so by the end of Harley Quinn's piece, they're all like loving each other, and you know, at first everyone was a bit shifty about Batman being there, but after Harley Quinn knocks them down with her karaoke, everyone's like, okay, we're all friends.
Nightwing's dancing. Batman's got his milk.
Batman does his throwback to the Adam West 60s bop. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And then one of the henchmen decides to start on Batman, because why not?
Yeah.
And it cuts to the exterior where we get the 60s style pow zock.
Yeah.
I think literally one of them was ball kick.
No, so it was like, ow, my nuts.
Yeah. Again, what are you fucking doing? What are you doing? By this point we were just like, oh Jesus Christ, when at this point I wanted it to end.
Yeah.
And then Floronic Man drops a sort of Easter egg, basically like, I've got a yam that'll help us transport, and it's one of Swamp Thing's yams, and it's like, right, we haven't talked about Swamp Thing.
But that's going back to the adult 1980s Swamp Thing stuff, where, if you guys haven't read this, is when it's a scene between Swamp Thing and Abigail Arcane.
Yeah.
And it's because Swamp Thing's, at this point, he's not a human who's become a marsh monster, he's actually become an elemental.
Yeah.
So he's not human, he's literally just an elemental who thought he was human.
Yeah.
So to have sex, the only way they can do it is, he's basically, you know, you eat part of me. So he's like, literally pulls out a yam from his body and offers it to, actually it's not as weird as it sounds, and he basically offers it to Abigail.
Yeah.
And she takes a bite, and it's like a massive trippy sequence.
Yeah.
And so done in a, you know, a really eloquent, well written Alan Moore style with some trippy visuals.
Yeah.
So it's kind of almost like, you know, Doors of Perception stuff. So when the Floronic Man, bearing in mind we've been watching a kind of semi-puerile, not quite sure, is it kids show, brings out the Yam stuff, I'm like, what?
Why would you basically have Swamp Thing's balls?
Yeah, pretty much.
Why? I mean, they had me reference to Swamp Thing previous, just like, they were trying to work out whether it was Swamp Thing or the Floronic Man.
Yeah.
But like, that's the first time I've ever heard Swamp Thing referenced in Batman. So anyway, they track them down. They have a big fight. There's this whole thing of like, will Harley betray them or not? And basically Harley decides to do things her way. Long story short, have a big old scrap.
Yeah.
Lots of red shirts die. Harley manages to talk Poison Ivy out of it by wiping off all her makeup and having a cry, which again is a reference to like sort of Birds of Prey, Gotham Siren stuff rather. Great again, but just not in keeping with the piece.
And I think they also don't they kind of hammer over the kind of like relationship between as well, like sapphic relationships. Yeah. So it's kind of again, it's like, right, you've gone adult again.
Yeah.
So you're no longer a kid's show. Yeah. What's going on, you know?
It's just but we're not done yet. We're not done yet. So long story short, they all combine powers, they all lose against the Floronic Man.
And his yams.
And then Swamp Thing appears and he's like, "Whoa, I am Swamp Thing. Don't, you know, you humans are dicks.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Floronic Man." Floronic's like, "Oh my god, he knows me.
Yeah.
He knows me.
I'm totes a fan."
And totes a fan. So Floronic Man's expecting a smiting and is like, throws himself on Swamp Thing's mercy. And Swamp Thing's not even interested. He's like,
"I'm a god.
Whatever you guys are doing is no concern of mine. It'll all sort itself out in the end because that's nature," and then disappears. So Floronic Man is like, "I can't believe I've gotten away with this. I've defeated Batman, Nightwing, blah, blah, blah. And Swamp Thing could have been the one thing to stop me."
Yeah.
And he hasn't. To which point, Batman's like, "Oh, damn, we fucking lost. I can't believe..." No, you know, in Scottish Batman, "We fucking lost." To which Harley Quinn's like, "Hey, wait a second. He's a plant man." And they're like, "Yep." She's like, "I've got a lighter." Literally cuts away to just a shot. The final shot is just the Floronic Man screaming on fire. So like, this is how they end this animated movie, is just a man screaming on fire. I mean, sure, he's a bad guy, sure, he's part plant, but that's literally how you end the movie, of just him running by like literally burning to death.
Forget the plot hole that technically he could use a yam and teleport elsewhere, but you know, just forget about that.
Forget about that.
Yeah.
And so, so we're sort of sitting there just stunned, like, I can't believe this is how they end the movie. And then the lights come back up and there's another scene of just, like, Harley Quinn's, like, clearly got sort of like a daytime psychologist chat show.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, that's the real final shot of the movie. Batman putting a good word for her.
Quite a funny gag. Quite, right.
Yeah. Quite a funny gag, but it keeps going.
Yeah.
And keeps going. And outstays its welcome. Yeah. And then the patient has to do an assault course.
Yeah. It's like the ultimate gladiator kind of thing.
And it goes on for its entirety. And then the film ends. There's no punchline. It's just like...
Well, that's the thing. The punchline was her getting a TV chat show. And I was like, "Oh, I get it." And then, like you say, went on for like 5 minutes, 6 minutes. It felt like 10.
This wasn't funny.
Yeah.
And just... But yeah, that was the film. You can download it now on most devices.
Yeah.
Like, I saw it was on PlayStation Network. I'm sure it's on streaming things.
Yeah.
If you want to. But wow, tonally.
I can't recommend it.
Tonally, it's everywhere. There's... bizarre, like, even though the sex scene was troubling, even before that there's like Batman blackmails like one of the Gotham super security people.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Just basically like, "You're gonna have to help me," and he's like, "Nah, Batman, I'm not." And he's like, "Yeah, but I know that you visit a dominatrix and she beats you up and stuff."
Yeah.
And like, they don't even shy away from it. Like, they barely shy away from it, I suppose. He's like, "What, you go and see Madame What's-Her-Face War is illegal in 12 states?" And it's like,
what?
Well, there's only one thing illegal in 12 states, and it's not a bit of slap and tickle.
Exactly.
So,
just it was uncomfortable.
No, it was okay. Then tone, it was all over the place. It felt very, I don't want to sound like a dad, but you know, like a grown, like not that's wrong with being a dad, obviously now. But yeah. It just felt very puerile and childish.
Mm.
And you know, I read comics. I'm a great man who reads comics. Doesn't have to, you know, but comics aren't necessarily childish. They're not necessarily like puerile like this. This felt all over the place.
Yeah,
felt lazy. Bearing in mind, you know, an animated Batman movie is an event. This is like a rare thing. So surely it's taken this long to do another one. And is that the best you can do? Is that the best story? You know, you're not limited by budget. You're not limited by what characters you can choose. Anyone.
Mm.
You chose Floronic Man, and you chose the version that he's a interdimensional dryad. This is how you can get set on fire.
You can get set on fire.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know what they were doing. I don't know what they were doing. There's lip service, but like it's so deep. I went on Twitter to see if I was going mad. And just, I think we might be. A lot of people are praising it. They're like, oh, it was better than I thought. And they're like, oh, that sex scene between Nightwing and Harley Quinn, really empowering. It's like, is it?
I thought it was quite funny, that bit. and it was the gag afterwards where she's in the back of the Batmobile and Nightwing and Batman aren't doing what she wants. And she kind of goes to Nightwing, well, off that's it, you blew your chance. I think the only time I'm going to call you again is if I run out of batteries or something.
Yeah!
And I was just like, oh, what? In fact, I remember there was like parents with like younger kids in the audience. And like, you could just imagine then the parents kind of going,
cringe. Bizarre.
Yes.
Bizarre.
That said,
yeah,
I would still want another animated series movie. Just maybe not the guys behind it. It was like, was it Paul Dini again?
Mm.
Who, you know, this guy's written some amazing stuff. You know, he's involved with the Batman Arkham games, the originals. You know, he's a good writer.
Yeah.
But no, this for the 25th anniversary of Harley Quinn, this felt like a massive misfire as a story. Casting, again, I thought she was great.
Yeah.
But is that the best you can do for the 25th anniversary?
I don't know. No. Why are we asking each other? Why are we asking you?
Why are we asking you?
But there you go.
Yeah.
There's our thoughts on it. Rent it if you want.
But
maybe wait for Netflix.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you go. That's another one done.
Right. We should head off now and make another BAM Comic podcast. If you like what you heard, remember to give us a follow on BAM Comic Cast on Twitter. We are on Facebook too. If you want to find me, it's Neil Gortz with a Z on Twitter. Stu, where can they find you?
You could find me under Stunami.
Yeah, you can. All right. Let us know your thoughts on today's episode. And if you're listening to it through some sort of Apple device, do give us a rating as it helps people find your show.
And if you feel inclined, by all means, give us a review.
If you do that, send it to us. You can help Stu sift some of his stash, which is considerable, so please do that.
I've got 3 comics to give away. I've given quite a few away recently, which is good, but there's still, it just seems to be breeding. help us
before comics destroy us all.
Great.
And on that note
and on that note
we'll see you next time.
Take care.
Bye.